Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast. My name is Zachary Mallory, and I am the host and founder of the Rise Above Justice Movement and the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast. Today, I would like to give a very broad viewer discretion as advice due to the nature of topics in which we will be discussing. Today, I am joined by my good friends and somebody that I admire and somebody that I deeply look up to, not just on social media, but in life as well. Priscilla is a keynote speaker, certified trauma-informed life coach, and trauma survivor who empowers others to become cycle breakers. Her life purpose is to help others heal from trauma, overcome limiting beliefs, and create their ideal lives. Without further ado, Priscilla, welcome to the Rise of Justice Movement podcast. Feel free to introduce yourself.
Thank you so much for the warm and loving welcome. I'm really happy to be on here today. And yes, I'm Priscilla Maria Gutierrez, known as the Cycle Breaker Coach on social media. And I'm very passionate about helping people just really love the life that they live.
Absolutely. And we've been interacting on social media for close to a year now. That's really hard to believe, but it's been close to a year. And you just wrote a book, and it's available now on Amazon, right?
Correct, yes.
And the name of the book is called Break the Cycle Before It Breaks You: Unlock the Mindset That Sets You Free. What inspired you to write this book? Walk us through your journey, walk us through the inspiration behind it, and tell us who Priscilla is.
Yeah, for sure. And before I answer that, I want to say that the admiration and appreciation is mutual. I'm really thankful for just all the advocacy and the platform that you and the co-founders have built. It's been really incredible and inspiring to witness. And as far as my book, so I would say the seed was planted when I was 14, after I just randomly came across the autobiography of Malcolm X. I still remember the day. I wanted to read something related to civil rights, and I never really heard of, I kind of heard the name, but I had no idea who Malcolm X was. I wasn't taught about him in school. And so I remember asking my dad about it. He's like, "Yeah, you should read it, and let's talk about it after you read it." And his autobiography just lit a fire inside of me. I just never read something like that, where someone is just so unapologetic, so honest. Owns their trajectory, their story, their lived experiences, and stands in it. And I knew after reading that book that one day I wanted to do something similar, but I kind of lost focus of that dream by the time I was 14. Life just happened, and so I didn't really revisit that dream until after law school, so very long time afterwards. And even me going to law school was out of a love for people and social justice and Black and Brown empowerment. But when I went to law school and experienced it, I did earn my Juris Doctor, but I knew even before I graduated, this is not my path. And so after law school, that was really the time that I focused on myself because I no longer was striving after a degree. I always knew as a little girl that I was going to go to college and grad school because that was ingrained in myself and my brother from my immigrant parents. Education is the ticket out of poverty, it's the ticket to freedom, etc. And so there was just no question of going to school. And so after I kind of fulfilled that, I was like, wait, now what? For the first, what, 24, 25 years of my life, I knew high school, college, grad school. And now for the first time, it was like, now what I do? Like, there's no more degrees or schools to apply to. And I had to really sit with myself and look inward. And to couple that kind of epiphany and self-awakening with trauma that had not been resolved, with a very unhealthy relationship that I felt trapped in, it was like a recipe for an internal revolution. And so that looked like me not taking the bar, making that decision that no, I know this isn't for me, and I'm going to stand on that. But now what? Like, that was a great decision that I did, but now what is the next step? There wasn't a clear path. And so I had to make one. I had to make my own path that made sense to me. And trust me, there was understandably family and loved ones questioning, what are you doing? I mean, thankfully, I had a scholarship to go to law school, so I don't feel as bad. But why do 3 years and, such an investment to ultimately choose not to practice law? And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that because I chose my truth and my authenticity, and I chose a calling. Even though I didn't know what that meant or what it looked like, there was this inner force telling me, that's not the life you want. That's just not the life for you. I need to be able to express myself. I need to be able to empower people how I want to empower them using my talents and my skill set. And I knew that personally, it wasn't through being a legal counselor. So it took some time to kind of figure out what that looked like for me. So I did different jobs, some in the nonprofit world. I did work at a law firm, actually, ironically, in a non-attorney role. And then when I was in Michigan, I spoke for the first time professionally as an advocate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And, it's a small stipend whenever you speak for them. So it definitely was not, nothing about me is money motivated. It's always been impact. And so I knew that after I spoke at the different high schools and community centers, that this is my purpose. And I knew that. Even as a 14-year-old, I knew that my purpose is to be outspoken, is to help other people on their healing journeys. But I just lost myself along the way. And so once I started to speak and I saw, like, oh, this is something that comes naturally to me, ironically, because I was very, very quiet growing up. But the more that I was authentic with myself, the louder my voice got, the more confident I felt in myself. And so after NAMI, pandemic hit, all that. So a lot of time for reflection, a lot of time for healing, self growth. I am someone who lives with lived diagnoses such as OCD, borderline personality disorder, and PTSD. And I've definitely invested a lot into that healing, a lot of tears, a lot of sitting with super uncomfortable feelings and memories, because at different points in my life, they were consuming me. So that's another reason that I didn't really have that ability to look inward and identify sooner who I am, what are my values, what are my dreams, because I was under a fog of pain from trauma, from mismanaged symptoms, from mental health conditions. So the more that I was able to manage those things and hold different people accountable and speak my truth, all of that helped me to ultimately write the book and become the speaker and the coach that I am. And so it was definitely a process. I came across, the power of social media. I came across a certified trauma recovery coach, and I had never heard of such a thing. I'd only been a patient for therapists, for psychiatrists, rehabs, wilderness programs. I only knew that binary, the doctor and the patient. And so to learn that, oh no, there's peer support. There's ways that other folks can be part of your healing journey where it's not clinical and it's a bit a different structure. And so I looked more into what did she do to become that certified trauma recovery coach. And I ended up going to the same program and becoming certified and then just going for it. And I was actually laid off from the law firm on my birthday of all days. on my birthday. And that was the push that I needed to just go for it. And so since then, I've been a solo entrepreneur with the speaking, with the coaching, with the writing and the advocacy. And once I was able to get a bit more established with my business, I was like, okay, now's the time. Now is the time to write this book that you've been wanting to write. And honestly, it was a very challenging experience. Writing has always been my strength since I was a little kid. And, throughout all of my schooling, my highest grades, writing. But this was the hardest thing I've ever had to write. And it wasn't because of anything other than I was choosing to sit in my truth. And when it comes to speaking, I've spoken in front of many people and I can release the words and they kind of dissipate into the air, or people internalize it or feel it, but it's not tangible. But with writing, each word is memorialized on that paper forever. And so that was definitely out of my comfort zone. When I speak, I can see who's in the audience. It's different. But when it comes to a book, anyone can read it, anyone can sit with it. And it was a little challenging just to become okay with that, especially because of the content of my book. And so Break the Cycle Before the Break, Before It Breaks You centers on trauma healing and different, almost like mantras to live by in order to eventually unlock that mindset that sets you free. And so I use myself as a case study. There's four, let me see, five different parts. And I use in each part a personal anecdote, some research, some exercises and challenges that people can do after the fact. So it's very much a journey to go through the book, truly to do each part. And I really just put my heart into it. I mean, I talked about my family. I talked about different experiences that I hadn't thought about in a long time. And the feedback that I've received so far has been very affirming because all of that discomfort and rumination over the book, and also the investment, the time, the energy, the money to bring it all together felt so worth it because I've already had folks tell me, like, whoa, I see myself in your story. I haven't talked to anyone about this except for maybe like so and so, and to see that you've also experienced it, and just so many things that made me feel like, yes, this is what I'm made to do, is to be an example that inspires others to take action. And so it was definitely, I want to say maybe like a 2-year journey, honestly, to really finish it. Shout out my speaking agency, Greek University. I published through them and they were helpful in kind of just helping me keep the ball rolling because it's very easy to stay kind of stagnant. And so I'm just super excited for more folks to read it. I really want it to get in the hands of people that need to read and know that they're not alone, know that they're not broken and they're not crazy and they're not weird and they're not all these different things that society often tells survivors and tells people of color and tells people that are neurodivergent or gender nonconforming. There's so many messages, and I just want like a safe space where here you are and you're loved, and here are words from my heart that I hope will be comforting and help you along with your journey.
Absolutely. And you mentioned about Malcolm X at the beginning of this. And one of my favorite quotes comes from Malcolm X. And it's about freedom and self-determination. Quote, "Nobody can give you freedom. Nobody can give you equality or justice or anything. If you're a man, you take it." This quote sticks out to me on a number of, for a number of different reasons. But one of the other ones is, if you don't stand for something, you will fall for anything. I stand firmly against sexual and gender-based violence, which is why I created the Rise Above Justice movement, to give that platform and to give the voice to people who don't reach those headlines, because we know how mainstream media is. We know that they are complicit in silence. How do we shatter through these glass ceilings? And how do we break those cycles of generational trauma? How do we decolonize self-care? How do we decolonize our communities? And how do we decolonize within ourselves of like all this ancestral trauma that we carry, right? And educating others on how to do it too is something that you do so very well. And I want to take a moment and recognize that a little over a week ago, which today is September 26th, so a little over a week ago, you posted about We Do Recover. And this is whenever your book was first announced. And you stated that you've been alcohol free since 11/2 of 2011. So, first of all, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And mine is also in November, but it's of 2018.
Ooh,
So
congrats.
it would have been November 9th of 2018. It was literally the day after my mom got divorced from an alcoholic stepfather. And as you state, it wasn't easy. And the recovery journey that I've had, like over the last several years, you said it best. There's been blood, there's been tears, there's been sweat, there's been nights of no sleep, literally at all. Sometimes my mind wanders. These are those after effects of trauma. And one of the other things that I wanted to bring up was, see, PTSD is not included in the DSM-5 or recognized by the American Psychological Association as a diagnosable, as diagnosable. And one of the things that the Healing and CPTSD Foundation does is advocate for the inclusion of CPTSD being added to the DSM-5, DSM-6, and et cetera. And what is your thoughts on complex CPTSD, and why would it be important to add that into the diagnosis criteria?
Yeah, that's a great question. And thank you for sharing about parts of your story. I didn't know that you were also alcohol free November date and 2018. And so that's really awesome. And as far as that, it's so interesting because like even in the beginning when you were talking about like decolonization and on Threads, I think maybe like yesterday, I posted like a little blurb about me and what I do, and already there was someone in the comments of, basically challenging my credibility. And there's a lot of folks that don't think coaches or basically non-clinicians should have any like part or say in certain spaces, like healing spaces, therapeutic spaces. And that really got me thinking because I see sides to both of it. I do believe in, some type of regulation or a means for people to lodge complaints or know that they're safeguarded and things like that. But I also know that clinicians are not everything. When I think of our ancestors in healing, they didn't need someone to have a degree or a PhD or an MD to provide healing or to help someone. And I think of just my own experiences. Honestly, I've suffered secondary harm from more than one therapist that I'm like, in the time that it happened, except for one of them, I really just took it because I thought, well, they're the doctor. They're the ones with the degree. I'm the one who's so like, has all these issues. And so I felt like that was really, and I'm only speaking from my experience, that isn't always the best dynamic. And so I don't think folks should solely rely on, well, what does the DSM think? What does the psychiatric field that is overwhelmingly white think? I say that having many friends that are licensed therapists, clinicians, I have respect for those clinicians that are trauma-informed, that are human-centered. I'm not talking about them, but when it comes to just as a whole, I don't think we should just defer to that whole community, because the first thing that comes to mind is just historically all of the abuse and violence that has been done against gay people, against women, against people of color. Like, and you're telling me that I'm just supposed to, oh, wait, I can't acknowledge my experience or validate someone's experience because so and so, a small group of people, doesn't think so. Mind you, speaking of gayness, that was considered a mental illness for a long time. And so many, like, if you go down the rabbit hole of all the different abuses towards those with mental health conditions and mental, quote unquote, insane asylums, like, all the abuses against those with, mental impairments. So let's just keep it 100. If you're going to talk about, the authority of the psychiatric field and the DSM, I think people should talk about those qualities as well. So, in short, to answer your question, I think it should be included for sure, number one. But also number two, even if it's not included, to me, it doesn't make it any less valid. And so I think it's important, though, that the DSM reflect the lived reality of so many people, because it ultimately helps us heal. So, for example, in my case, I've been misdiagnosed. I was originally diagnosed with borderline, and then I was went to get a second opinion from a psychiatrist. Mind you, the person who the psychologist that diagnosed me with BPD, that was the first session. She was like, I'm pretty sure you have BPD, which in retrospect, I've learned is highly inappropriate to literally just meet someone. The psychiatrist that I went to, same thing, first meeting. And she told me, well, I don't believe in personality disorders. I know it's in the DSM or whatever she said, but really borderline is actually just a part of bipolar. So you're bipolar. And so now I was diagnosed as bipolar. I'm like, well, damn. In like a span of what, a couple of months, I got like two new diagnoses. Like, and so and it really matters because there's different recommended treatments for certain diagnoses. So the medicine that I was prescribed with that under that bipolar diagnosis, my body had a really bad reaction to it because I don't live with bipolar disorder and I should have never been diagnosed or given those medicines. And so, had I been properly diagnosed with complex PTSD or borderline sooner, that would have been honestly life-saving for me because, for those who may not be aware of living, for example, with borderline personality disorder, it's intense. It's basically a lot of emotional dysregulation, which can lead to certain behaviors like suicide ideation, suicide attempts, self-harm, binge drinking, eating disorders, etc. And I wonder, in retrospect, what if I had this diagnosis in college? What if I had the proper medicine that I am on now? That would have completely like helped me so much. And so that's why accurate diagnoses matter. And that's why the DSM needs to basically redeem itself for its track record of abuses and get up to date. When I read the Body Keeps the Score, even PTSD, that they had a hard time getting that validated by the DSM. And now we know, of course, PTSD is real, and the life, how much it can affect someone's life. And so there's ample examples that show, yeah, the DSM is just not always the be all, authority.
Exactly. And I have to agree that it should absolutely be up to date. It should absolutely reflect, that complexity. And, I too can kind of like see like both sides to it. I have always been the person that always shatters the narratives and shatters like the norms, essentially, right? I mean, I'm non-binary, I'm queer. Like, obviously, there's a lot that goes into that, that self-discovery, but it also comes from a place of healing, and it comes from a place of resilience and resistance. And, no pun intended, but I'm also a cycle breaker too, which coincidentally, as you stated, the cycle breaker coach, which I absolutely love. And I would love for you to talk a little bit about being the founding or being the founder of the Cycle Breakers Club. I know that's like your LLC, and I absolutely love the name of it. So walk us through, being the founder of the Cycle Breakers Club and what you do, what it entails, and just give us an overview of the Cycle Breakers Club.
Yeah, for sure. I'd love to. And you are absolutely a cycle breaker, for sure. And you're helping so many on their cycle breaking journeys. And so the Cycle Breakers Club, it is the name of my business. And to me, it's a dream come true, but also a dream that's still coming true. And so I'm still developing it. It's just me. And so I really had to like brainstorm, like, what do I want to provide? What services, what value do I want to provide? And the phrase cycle breaker, I'm certainly not the originator of it. It's just very powerful to me because I've always heard it in a context where someone is outspoken, bold, audacious, willing to say what maybe others won't. And so I really wanted to embody that and also highlight that none of us come into this world empty-handed. At least that's my belief. And I say that more metaphorically than finances. So when we are born, we all have an ancestral inheritance of gifts and traumas, pain and wisdom. And so I wanted to also highlight that because that's something I realized in my own healing journey. That was like, okay, something's missing because I've gone to like so many different therapy sessions, and it's like a big part of the story is missing. I've only been really talking about myself, but I don't exist in a vacuum. I am the product of Latino immigrants and refugees. Their pain, their trauma didn't just disintegrate. It affected their parenting of me. It affected the worldview that they helped me develop as a child, et cetera. And so, and I saw that with a lot of my friends where, yeah, there's certain patterns that you see in families and in your own family. And I wanted to draw attention to that and also to tie it back to the communities that I love. I want to see, different, just people that I love just be happy. And so that's really the motivation behind just going for it and investing in myself to get it up and started. As far as what I provide, it's all online as of now, but it's coaching services, speaking services, and those are the two main ones. And so with the coaching, I provide, the Cycle Breaker coaching program, which is one-on-one private coaching. I'm also experimenting with developing an online community of the same name, Cycle Breakers Club. Currently, it's housed on Substack, and that's going to be a space where I will continue to provide long form posts as well as their version of kind of like tweets. So just kind of like get the conversation just regularly happening. And I just want to attract folks that may feel alone in their cycle breaker journey because often cycle breakers are, quote unquote, the black sheep of the family. And so it can feel very isolating
you can feel very othered. And so I want folks to know that you can create your own family. Shared DNA is not enough for me. It's not equivalent to compatibility. We can be identical twins and still not be meant to be in each other's lives, is how I feel. And so that's how I see my community, is like-minded, or people just wanting to grow and feel that healing energy and that family kind of connection. And so that's the vision. So it's still definitely, figuring out, growing it. As far as the speaking, I would say the highlight so far has been speaking at my alma mater back in April. So my college experience, like I mentioned in my book, it was very chaotic. A lot of things happening. And a lot of things not mentioned in the book. So maybe for a future book. And so for me to revisit that place after years was wild to me. And to be in the very room where I was sitting as a student, so lost and confused, to come back invited as a speaker to speak to students was like wild to me. And so that's definitely a love that I have, is storytelling. Sharing my story, healing out loud for those suffering in silence. And so I go to different colleges. The last place I actually spoke at was at a conference for the National Center for Victims of Violence. And I actually was on a panel with Marley and Cage of the Su Survivors for Justice Reform. And we spoke about restorative justice. And so now, like my Substack, for example, I'm kind of moving it more towards mindset and then niching it down more to goals. Like, I really want to help people move forward and kind of just apply the different skill sets that I've gathered over the years in a way that is very like tangible. Like, I know as a survivor, for many of us, it can be hard to set goals. It can be hard to set a goal if your self-image is not the best because of what happened to us. It can be difficult to even be optimistic about the future. It can be difficult to think that we're capable of certain things when our trauma or our abusers have convinced us otherwise. And so there's something about just goals and dreams and aspirations that I really want to help people with that part of their cycle breaker journey, is you can create truly the life that you want. It doesn't have to continue on a certain trajectory because of what your family tells you or society tells you or because of what your past looks like. And so, in a nutshell, that's what I do. And I'm really looking forward to just expanding it and continuing to put my heart and soul into it.
Absolutely. You know, and I've known you long enough that I know that you bring your whole self to everything that you do, which is deeply admirable. And I want to pivot into your book really quick. And in part four, you talk about letting go of loyalty and ride or die culture. Can you walk us through that part really quick?
Yeah, for sure. And I'm definitely a work in progress. So I strive to embody what I encourage others to also embody. So just being, very real and transparent, I still struggle with that. I still struggle with boundaries and things like that. But as far as that part specifically, I speak to my culture and to my upbringing. So my father's from Nicaragua, my mother's from Ecuador, and I'm the proud daughter of two Latin Americans that came to this country not by choice, for different reasons, and they brought with them their culture. So part of the Latin culture, at least for many households, is different cultural scripts like Marianismo, which refers to essentially women embodying the spirit of the Virgin Mary under Catholicism. So, for example, being self-sacrificial, being subservient, very submissive, things like that. Some other cultural scripts are machismo, where men are very much centered and they're supposed to be the providers and the leaders, and they're the ones who call the shots. And another one is familismo, which basically puts the family unit above the individual. So you need to do things that benefit the family's well-being. That also includes protecting, quote unquote, the family reputation and things like that. And so I had to really, because I was brought up with those cultural scripts, that looks like me being very of service to others, which that is my love language. It is acts of service. And so it's okay that I have that as my love language, but there's been different times in my life where I was willing to put myself on fire to keep someone warm, was willing to be the rehabilitation center for a man that wasn't even worthy of all that emotional labor. And so many different examples throughout my life where I didn't put myself first, I didn't practice boundaries. I also didn't really know how to practice boundaries or have a voice to even set those boundaries. And so I honor that as well. And so the thing about that off-brand loyalty is it's almost glamorized. It actually is glamorized, I would say, in my experience, with different songs, novelas, things that were taught inside the household. It's like I've always known since I was a kid, you ride or die for your family. You do the most for your family. You sacrifice, we're in this together type thing. But I had to learn that, wait, loyalty is not the same as codependency, enmeshment, having a complete lack of boundaries, not being able to be yourself, things like that. Because I saw different examples of that in my extended family where I'm like, I thought that was like normal. I thought like, let me think of an example. Like, for example, one of my relatives is also queer and they were never allowed to be themselves. It was very apparent that they were queer. So it was just like this ridiculous open secret, but they could not be themselves because an elder in our family was homophobic and would not allow any of her kids to be queer. And so I thought, oh, okay, so that is loyalty. You know what I'm saying? Like that's how even that person framed it. Like, no, I won't do that to my loved one. I won't cause them that pain. I won't cause them that embarrassment. Like, I won't live out loud until they pass because just out of respect for them. And I never agreed with that. Like, let's be clear. Like, I never agreed with that. The more that I aged and realized more and more, like, it would make me angry. Like, how is this happening? How is this allowed? But when I was more like a younger kid, I was like, oh, okay, this is kind of like what we do. Like, you're supposed to almost blindly have allegiance to your elders. And so I had to learn, like, no, you don't have to die. If the two options are ride or die, that's a 50% chance of you dying. That's a really high rate. I'm not going to eat something that has a 50% lethal poisoning chance. So why am I going to accept a relationship where there's a 50% chance of me dying, either, emotionally, physically, metaphorically? And so I had to really unlearn that. And I've made a lot of progress with that. I've set a lot of boundaries. I'm not really connecting with a lot of relatives at this point. And yeah, and in different relationships, professional, romantic, friends. And so I really had to learn that the most important relationship is the one with myself. And I wasn't brought up like that. And I certainly didn't have a lot of examples of that, especially as a woman, as Latina. You're supposed to put others first. And add to that, I was raised Catholic. And I remember even as a kid in Catholic school, they teach us joy means Jesus first, other second, and then you. And so I had to really unlearn a lot of messaging from my culture, society, religion, gender roles that no, it's actually okay to be loyal to myself first and foremost and not play this ride or die, all giving sacrificial woman.
Thank you for sharing, a lot of your story, and just that I know it's like the Cliff Notes version, and there's a lot more, details that go into that. And your story is very complex, kind of like mine is. Mine does a cross between gun violence, domestic violence, religious trauma, conversion therapy, going through drug addiction, alcohol. So it's like encompassing of a lot of different aspects, so I fit the definition of complex PTSD. It's just not diagnosable, right? So
Yeah, I feel you.
but and it's like I go through like these diagnostics, like you can do like a self-diagnostic, and kind of go through and you can look at different diagnosing criteria. And you mentioned about NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. I used to be very involved with NAMI, and then I got burned out very quickly. That was right after the pandemic, and the pandemic took a lot out of me. Being stuck at home and being an extrovert, it changed me a little bit, to say the least. But what other organizations have you been involved with, and what's been your experience?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the pandemic also affected my relationship with NAMI, in that I couldn't talk anymore to different, students and different events. And as far as different organizations, I would say I've had overall pretty awesome experiences. So, for example, kind of going back to the whole, coaches and advocates and what are their roles in healing spaces, the first person who really helped me to validate my rape, which happened back in 2017, was an advocate. It was someone who was trained to serve sexual assault survivors. And it was at, I believe, Safe House in Michigan back when I was out there. And she just like listened to me. Like it was like wild. Like, oh, wait, I don't have to like make a case. I don't have to like convince you. I don't have to like she put me in the driver's seat and she said, how did you feel? And so that was like so liberating. And truly, when I started to accept that I had experienced rape, and that was what, maybe 2 years after the fact. And mind you, I was in therapy that entire time, but the therapists that I worked with were very, very questionable. And I talk about it in my book, different invalidating statements. And so that was definitely an awesome organization that I recommend. And at a later point, I actually eventually trained with them to be a domestic violence advocate. And I was able to volunteer and co-facilitate a domestic violence support group inside of a woman's prison back in Michigan. And unfortunately, the pandemic also ended that. But I still think of those women. I still think of, the experiences we had together. And so that safe house definitely stands out to me. Trauma-informed, just treating people with respect goes a long way. Another one that I want to shout out is the Sober Black Girls Club. And so they are phenomenal. And Katie is the one who founded the club, and it centers on alcohol reduction or abstinence. Basically, whatever your journey is, you're welcome, or even just curious. And I eventually began co-hosting on Tuesday nights. Those meetings, and they still are open 7 p.m. Eastern time for people of color that are non-binary, femme, women. To come and also queer to come and have support. And that was really healing for me because that was the first time I was in a recovery space where white people were not the center. Like, I had never experienced that before, because the wilderness program, the intensive outpatient program for alcohol, the eating disorder treatment program I went to, the therapist that I saw, like, it was all very white. And I say, and some people may not understand, like, first of all, you're pale, like super pale, like what does it matter to you? But if you're a person of color, or minority, global majority, whatever label you want to use, you know how it feels to just feel so othered, where the food, for example, in the eating disorder treatment center, the food they're eating, the things they're talking about, I'm like, what? Like this, you know, there's just like a there's a cultural disconnect, and things like that. And so just to have this space, it's led by a Black woman, majority of people are Black or some other type of brown, Latino, mostly. And so that was just really healing to be like, oh, I can be in a space where I don't have to explain as much things. Like, they just get it. So definitely want to shout them out. And then who else? And then actually looking on the other side, I'm not going to say their name. I'm not going to say their name just really for legal reasons, but this particular well, it is a business. It is an app, and I was a coach for them for some time. And the things that happen behind the scenes and the just unethical things and lack of procedures in place. And mind you, this is an app for folks in recovery. So this is a very sensitive space topic. Things people are, you know, fighting for their lives, fighting for their families, etc. And they were not trauma informed. The people in charge, the like top people in charge, weren't in recovery and didn't know what the hell they were talking about. And so I ultimately left because it just was so misaligned with my values. And there's like a lot that happened, but I say that to say that it is important. So like the comment that I got on Threads, and I've gotten like another comment on Instagram where people will basically question like, who are you to talk about trauma at all or mindset and things like that? And the thing is, it's important to, I think each case needs to be scrutinized, because there are coaches like myself that truly are trauma informed. They stay in their lane. They're not out here selling dreams or trying to cross any boundaries. And then there's people like the founders of this organization who see, oh, there's money in recovery spaces. There are people that are desperate for a solution that they're willing to pay whatever, or they're in a really difficult situation. And so there are predatory people that will see that and see like, oh, okay, I can make money off this. So, and we see that with, you know, different types of programs and whatnot. I remember a while ago, there was like this commercial where the guy in the commercial was like, oh, I used to be an addict, but now I'm not. And it was like for this place in like a really luxurious area. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, anyways, it just made it seem like addiction was something that you just like snap away and like, it never happened. Like, I very much consider myself in recovery. It's not something that just like went away. So I'm trying to give, you know, kind of both sides where there's really amazing organizations. And then, yeah, there's some questionable, you know, more profit-driven organizations that exist as well. So it's important to just try and do your research, see, you know, different reviews online, or if you're able to talk to someone who has worked for the organization or that is currently involved in the organization. And you always give yourself permission to leave an organization if it doesn't align with you and find a more aligned organization. There's a lot out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to say thank you again for, the work that you do in creating this space of, inclusion within your social media and with like everything that you do. I want to acknowledge, the courage that you have to support others and also taking care of yourself is so incredibly important. And my last question to you, and obviously you have an open invite to be on the podcast anytime you would like to. And my last question to you, and I know you probably get messages like this, but my last question for you is if somebody was to message you, on Instagram or Threads, because on Threads you can message people now. I don't know if you knew that, but yes, you can message people now. If somebody was to message you looking for support on how to break the cycle, and how to get support, they're getting ready to tell their story for the first time, either at a trial for their perpetrator or to the police. What would you tell them and why?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I didn't know that you can message on Threads, so that I might need to check my inbox if there's anything sitting there. But as far as that, I would say you are the expert on your body, on your mind, and on your experiences. You are the authority. You are the person that was there. It happened to you. You know better than anyone what occurred and how to feel about it. And so I would really just emphasize that the power of self-validation, which I talk about in my book, to be, a superpower. I really didn't know that was even an option. I always looked to therapists, to my elders, to validate and tell me, was this like, do I have a right to be mad or to be sad? Was that traumatic? Instead of saying, wait, hell yeah, it was traumatic. I wouldn't be having these nightmares. I wouldn't be fainting. I wouldn't be having all these challenges if it was just a regular Tuesday. It's something that catastrophically just disrupted my nervous system and my body's ability to cope. And so I would really emphasize that to keep that front and center for them. And also know that it's your story. It's your story to tell or not tell. If you don't, that's not what you want to do. If you want to write it in a journal, you want to tell your dog. I've had people tell me, like, yeah, I'll just tell things to my dog, and that helps me. Do whatever you want, tell it to nature. But it's your decision. It's your choice. It's your story to dictate. And know that, like, even for someone like me, and I appreciate you just really recognizing and seeing and hearing me on social media when I share parts of my story, because as I mentioned previously, I was very, very quiet growing up. And it's not because that's really my personality. I am very chill, but it was like selective mutism, like about like that at different points in my life. And that was just trauma. That was just, a lot going on. And so if I can go from that to being someone that shares so openly, that is possible for anyone should they choose to do that as part of their healing journey. Definitely not required. And know that it's also been a gradual process. So I actually started out with giving testimony at church, and then it went into writing essays online for different like websites, and then I went to the speaking in public, and then making like videos. So it definitely has been like years worth like a journey. So just to also share that with folks, that there is no deadline for your healing. There's no pace that you have to go at. You are in the driver's seat. You decide the course. You decide who comes along for the ride. You are the boss.
And that leads into taking back your voice, taking back your energy, taking back, your time. And it's like reclaiming that, and like the decolonization within itself, you know. And I just want to say thank you, you know, for being a bright light in a world that can seem very dark. And you bring this energy and you bring your passion, and it shows in everything that you do. And I want to say thank you for that. And to anybody out there, make sure you follow Priscilla on social media as Cycle Breaker Coach. You can order her book online on Amazon. You can also go to her social media and find the link directly to it. And then it'll also be on our social media as well. And then it'll also be on our website, which is currently being updated. There's a couple other things that we'll be doing with Priscilla as well, and highlighting the work that she's doing. And, you know, Priscilla, thank you for coming on the podcast today. I greatly appreciate you.
Yes, the honor and privilege is mine. Thank you so much for everything that you do. I mean, I literally check the Instagram account every day. That's like my most trusted news outlet for real, for real. So, I really, really feel blessed and appreciate that you put so much energy in your heart and soul into amplifying voices that are so often not heard or silenced. So I look forward to our future collaborations and thank you for having
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Priscilla.
me.